and we're going to start with a surprise quiz for the kids. Are you ready? We're having a surprise quiz for the kids. Let's see a few kids. Are you nervous? Oh, okay. From yesterday's class. So you took notes, right? Okay. Another name for Lord Balaram is... You know that one? He forgot. Yes. Aladar. Next question. The duration of Lord Brahma's day in years is... Okay, very good. So that's 4,320,000 times 1,000. 4,320,000 times 1,000, because there's 1,000 yuga cycles every day, and 4 yuga cycles is 4,320,000. Next question. During the night of Lord Brahma, what does Lord Brahma do? Don't say he goes to sleep. What's the answer? Yoga Nidra. And where does he do his Yoga Nidra? Someone else. You haven't answered the question. Where does he go? Where does he go? Inside the body of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Okay. Next question. Narada has a very special body, special form. What's special about Narada's form? Krishna Kirtan. What's special about the form of Narada? Go ahead. He has a spiritual form. How do we know that? He told us. Yeah? You forgot, right? Okay. So next question. What happens to Narada during the night of Brahma? Because during the previous day he achieved that spiritual form of Narada. What happened during the night of Brahma?
He enters Garbhodakshaya.
Sure, same. Okay. We heard this morning, you weren't there, so this is, quiz is over. You want to add something? No, okay. Quiz is over. He, according to Jiva Goswami, there are many varieties of souls, and then there's special souls, and Narada is a special, special soul. Some of the special, special things about Narada is that he, like Krishna, appears as the son of Vasudeva, and therefore another name of Krishna is Vasudeva, the son of Vasudeva. Vasudeva. You might have a quiz on this tomorrow evening, so you better take good notes. Another name for Krishna is Vasudeva, the son of Vasudeva. But actually, Krishna is the father of all. He has no father. So how can he have a father? It's a pastime. Similarly, Narada has a spiritual form. So how can he, who is Narada's father? Lord Brahma. But it's a pastime, our acharyas explain. And when he's in his yoga nidra, yesterday Rajiv said it's like a meditative state. Mystic slumber, Prabhupada. So he was self-awaking. He ended his meditation or his meditative state or his mystic slumber. And then he appeared. By the arrangement of the Lord, he appeared as one of the sons of Brahma. What's something else that's special about Narada? We heard this morning. Yeah. Yeah, he is the most, very good. He's the most learned and the most important pinnacle or epitome or topmost, like the top, the very top apex of knowledge. Knowledge of devotional service. Very good. What else? This is an open quiz question. What else did we hear about Narada? Special?
He plays on his Kantamani
Govinda. Yeah, the sounds that play, that come from his veena, even the sounds of his veena are transcendental. What else?
He can see the pastimes of Krishna in his heart.
Yeah. He just has to sing and he can see Krishna in his heart. I guess he sings a lot. What else? He can travel, unlike his brothers, Bhrigu, Atri, Amgira, Varichi. He can travel anywhere in the material or the spiritual realm. No problem. No fuel shortage. No visas, no passports. No immigration and customs. He just goes. Even to the spiritual world, he's transcendental. So Prabhupada, there's several verses, and Prabhupada explains in those purports. Prabhupada wanted us to understand, so I'm emphasizing it again. He's Rishi, he's Narada Rishi, or he's a Muni, he's a very learned person. But he's the same category as Krishna. Only he's a Jiva soul, not a Vishnu Tattva, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then we ended this morning with Narada is making his first of two or three verses that are in conclusion. So he's now summarizing this whole long narrative. It's taken two chapters. This is the end of two chapters where he's been describing things. So it's, what was the concern? Oh, you weren't here for chapters four. So in chapter four, this is chapter six. So going back to chapter four, Narada's concern was, yikes, Kali Yuga. Because he can look ahead and he can experience, as we can experience things now, he can experience things now perfectly because he's Narada. And he can experience things that haven't happened yet perfectly. Vyas, also. Trikala Gya. Three phases of time, past, present, and future. So he saw in the future, whoa, look at that Kali Yuga, very, very bad condition. I want to do something. What's the root of the problem was too much affinity for matter. But these are souls that don't have anything to do with matter. They have too much affinity for matter, and so all their consciousness gets covered, all their good qualities becomes covered. They become so covered. And they start in that covered state, they're doing all these bad things. What to do? So he compiled the Vedas to give them direction, what to do. So, happiness is coloring book. Okay. He compiled the Vedas and then felt dissatisfaction. We're going to hear some more about this dissatisfaction, or all of what he's explained is how to come to the position of satisfaction of the soul. That is, the satisfaction of the soul is where the soul is in contact with the Supreme, and when the soul is in contact with the Supreme, automatically this too much affinity for matter is dissipated. So that's what he said this morning, in this morning's verse. He said, "It is personally experienced by me that those who are always full of cares and anxieties due to desiring contact of the senses with their objects can cross the ocean of nations on a most suitable boat. The constant chanting of the transcendental activities of the personality of Godhead." So, I'll assume most of you heard the verse, but this is just review. Because the mitigating process, there's this affinity for matter problem, and it's mitigated, it's diminished by the hearing process. And all the cares and anxieties and all that yucky stuff that goes with material existence, it's dissipated, it's diminished by hearing and chanting. Then he goes the other direction and says, the other process is out there in the spiritual marketplace of ideas, of things that people might do to diminish the affinity for matter problem. He says, very important, it's a very important point, which addresses the stuff in chapter 4, the whole of the Vedas. That is, there are other practices that address the too much affinity for matter problem. They can, if, to some degree, reduce disturbances and diminish that pushing and the vagum, the urge to involve the soul with something that's never going to bring happiness. So there are yoga practices like that. But one of the things that they never do and never can do is bring satisfaction to the self. So what happens if there's no satisfaction on a higher platform? It's just a matter of time when it'll go down to that lower platform again. Vishaya vinivartante niraharsha dehina vasovarjum rasopyasya brahmdrishvandavartate. Krishna describes this in Bhagavad Gita. Vishaya, this strong attraction to enjoy the senses. So, that's a problem. Problem for the conditioned soul. We don't like to suffer, but we want to enjoy. And all we know is how to enjoy through the senses. And so here we go, trying to enjoy through the senses, and we get suffering. It's a bad deal. It's cheating. Maya is cheating us. Maya makes it look like enjoyment. And we jump in to get enjoyment. Instead we get suffering. If we don't know the alternative, then we just try to make it zero because we don't want to suffer. Make it zero doesn't work either because that also doesn't satisfy the self. That's what's being said here. It is true that by practicing restraint of the senses by the yoga system, one can get relief from the disturbances of desire and lust, but it is not sufficient to give satisfaction to the soul. For this, satisfaction is derived from devotional service to the personality of Godhead. So we're hearing Narada's giving an answer. He's like answered it five times now. Why Vyasa is feeling dissatisfaction after compiling all the Vedas? For heaven's sakes, he's like, you know, he didn't just write a book. He wrote scripture. Not just a scripture. He wrote a whole bunch. All the Vedas. He compiled them all and he knew it perfectly and he did it perfectly and he got an A plus. And he's still feeling dissatisfied. Professor Narada gave him an A plus in what he did do, but what he didn't do, he got an F. Because he didn't exclusively focus on glorifying the personality and Godhead. So these A plus ideas, these processes that bring some mitigation or relief of the disturbances caused by here in the Sanskrit, kama, loba, hato, muhu, curbing kama and loba. Often Prabhupada translates these kama and loba couplet as lust and greed. Here he's chosen to translate them as desire for sense gratification and lust for satisfaction of the senses. It's like senses and the senses. Take your pick. Sounds like the same thing. Senses or the senses? Lust or greed? It's too much affinity for matter. That's the problem. And so he's saying these other processes, they help to curb this affinity for matter problem. But what it doesn't do is it doesn't bring satisfaction to the self. Atma shamyati, or Atma adha shamyati. The satisfaction of the soul for practical purposes is not accomplished. Now let's go back. This is a little review on the tapestry or the composition of Srimad Bhagavatam. There's a theme, like, you know, a golden thread that appears in the tapestry of the Bhagavatam, or, you know, a light that shines in this very, very beautiful way, where Vyasa wants to draw us to what we all want. We all want to be satisfied. We all want to be happy. There isn't somebody who wants to be unhappy. Everyone wants to be happy. And happy at a very deep level. Full satisfaction. Going back to chapter 4 that launched this whole discussion of Narada, Vyasa is looking within himself and he's feeling this absence of satisfaction or dissatisfaction. And Prabhupada writes one sentence, but it's very powerful. Perfection is never attained until one is satisfied at heart. Vyasa was searching within himself to see. The devotee should do this. Like introspecting. The introspective sage in the language of Bhagavad Gita. So we look within and say, what am I feeling? There's this common thing, conventional, get in touch with your feelings phrase. So Narada Vyasa is looking within himself and he's getting in touch with what's his condition of heart. And he's finding, I'm not satisfied. I'm not feeling satisfaction. And Prabhupada writes, perfection is never attained until one is satisfied at heart. I did coincidentally did a little searching today for different dictionary definitions of the word sincere. Because I remember hearing sometime in the past from one sannyasi, Prabhupada disciple, sannyasi Sahotra Swami, that sincere comes from a Latin term that refers to pure marble that has no lines in it. It gets very, very valuable. You can get marble that has lines in it. Like often, you know, marble floors. It's different colors and they have different... It's hard. But those that don't have lines in it, it's more expensive. Like deities. It's very, 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 very special marble. So, it comes from the Latin word sin, means without, C-I-N. Scire means flaw, without, so it's flawless. It's, so sincere is that there's no duplicity. It's just, you know, there's no other motivation in someone's effort to, like say, a sincere act of kindness, a selfless act of kindness. It's just, there's no motivation involved. Or in the synonyms, it says hearty, or it's genuinely from the heart. So that's what I'm making this connection here. Unless one is satisfied in the heart, what's the question of perfection? What's the question of being anything but restless? And that's what Vyasa was feeling. It's a theme within the Bhagavatam. We'll go back to... You ready for a little Bhagavatam exploration? Chapter 1 of Canto 1. There is a question by the sages. One of the questions by the sages is, please describe the essence of the scriptures and explain it for the good of all living beings, that by such instructions their hearts may be fully satisfied. Hey, this is the theme. How the heart can be fully satisfied. The sages want to know from Sutta Goswami. And Sutta Goswami tells them. And what does he tell them? Munaya sadhu prishtoham 125 Bhagavatam. Bhavadbir loka mangalam yatkrita krishna samprashno yenatma supersedati. This phrase. Yenatma supersedati, or yayatma supersedati. Same as 1111, 125, 126. How does that satisfaction? This is Sutta saying to the sages, your questions are good because they bring satisfaction to the self. Now here's the answer that brings satisfaction to the self. Savai pung sam paro dharmo yato bhakti adhok sajay. Ahaituki pratyata. What's the last line? Yayatma supersedati. The sages in the audience, Sutta Goswami, they all want this, and it's not selfish. It's the pure condition of the soul, this sincere, without any lines, without any motivation, without any other purpose, just the pure condition of the soul. What's that pure condition of the soul? Only then will we be satisfied. It's when Vaipungso Paro Dharmo Yito Bhaktir Padhokshaje. It's Parabhakti, the Paradharma, with a supreme occupation of living being is engaged in devotional service to the personality of God. That's the message. And it comes again. No surprise. It's a theme. Purity is the message of the Bhagavatam. And what is that purity? It's unmixed devotion. Sincere devotion to the personality of Godhead. Stitvam sattve prasidati. Text 19. 1 to 19. Tadara jastamo bhava kama lobhada yaschei cheta etair anavidham stittvam. Excuse me. Stittam sate proceedati. How to go beyond the modes of nature. We heard Narada describe how he went beyond all the influences of the modes, all the influences of past karma. Zoom, zoom, zoom. Beyond it. Right? Completely. That's the Bhagavatam wants to take us there. So, the same thing comes when Vyasa is analyzing himself. I'm feeling incomplete. Although I myself am fully equipped with everything required by the Vedas. So what Narada has done is take a little subset of what comes from the Vedas in some process of meditation where the senses are brought under control, under the control of the mind, and amalgamated under the mind. And so that brings about some relief from the disturbances of engaging the senses and sense objects. They're withdrawn from the sense objects. There's no satisfaction of the soul. So where does that satisfaction of the soul come from? For one thing, devotional service. He wants us to understand, he's instructing Vyas, and so by instructing Vyas, he's instructing us. Like Krishna is instructing Arjuna to instruct us. Like the mother instructs the daughter-in-law, the daughter to instruct the daughter-in-law. But we're being instructed. How, if we want satisfaction, if we want to go beyond the struggles of misery and suffering and this and that, it's got to be with pure devotion to the personality of Godhead. Yenatma supersedati, or here the language is Atma Shamyati. Shamyati, being satisfied. So, in Prabhupada's purport, the yoga system is for controlling the senses. It's a mechanical system. Controlling the senses. It's just sound effects, that's all. Mechanical system. So that you'll stay awake. Mechanical system. It's not a natural system. And because it's mechanical, it makes the heart hard. And the devotional process makes the heart soft. And pure. And in that soul being connected to the Supreme, this attraction for the senses, of the senses for sense objects, just fades and fades and gone. Now there's some vidhis, some rules and regulations that we follow because it's part of the bhakti process. That's nice. If vidhis is not the essence of the bhakti process, it's our love for Krishna that's the essence of the bhakti process. And that's what Prabhupada explains in the purport. 3 points. That devotional service, Nara is explaining from my own practical experience, because he was a nobody, and then he became Narada. So from his own practical experience of being a nobody, he had experience of what it was to have sense attraction. And to go beyond sense attraction, he had this meditation process that he did, but that's not what did it for him. It was this attraction for the personality of Godhead. He was given a mantra and he was absorbed in becoming attracted to the personality of Godhead. So he says that devotional service to the Lord is more effective and practical than the system of artificially controlling the senses. Now why is that? Prabhupada explains why it is. When there's devotional service, the senses are given practical engagement. And it's artificial to be in a straitjacket with your eyes blindfolded and your mouth gagged and your ears plugged and you can't move and you've got your senses under control. That's really artificial. It may work for some time, but the mind is going to think, I want to see something, I want to smell something, I want to hear something, I want to taste something. Let me out of the straitjacket. So, the bhakti process is more effective because it gives the senses practical activity that purifies the senses, because it's service to the master of the senses, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam, Bhakti Ruchate. Or here in the Sanskrit is Mukunda Sevaya Yadvat. It's through the service to Mukunda that one achieves this state of liberation. Liberation, Mukunda, Mukti, from the harassing experience of material existence, just by serving Krishna. It's more effective because it gives the senses positive engagement. To check them artificially is no check at all. Because as soon as there is some opportunity for enjoyment, the serpent-like senses will certainly take advantage of it. He gives examples. There's one of his favorite examples, Vishwamitra and Menaka. But in contrast, there's Haridas Thakur, who even Maya personified came, and he wasn't moved. So, first point, the bhakti process is more effective than the artificial process of restraining the senses. Donalita, you got that one? Okay. Second, the yoga process is incomplete without bhakti. Or say it the other way around. With bhakti, the yoga process is made complete. We'll say it the other way again. Without bhakti, the yoga process is incomplete. What's incomplete about the yoga process? It may give restraint to the senses, but it doesn't give satisfaction to the self. So, pure devotional service is itself transcendental, and pure devotional service brings the other processes to the stage of completion, which they're otherwise not going to do. They won't bring one to completion. Although they can bring you better than disturbed by sense attraction. Here's how Prabhupada writes, such pure devotional service is transcendental by nature, and the systems of yoga and jnana are subordinate to such process. When the transcendental devotional service is mixed with subordinate process, it is no longer transcendental, but it's called mixed devotional service. So, jnana mishra bhakti, karma mishra bhakti, like that. There's a verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita where it says bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakale ashanta. One's mind isn't peaceful as long as there's an agitation for bhukti, sense enjoyment, mukti, liberation, or mystic power, siddhi. The mind becomes agitated. It uses a metaphor and says that they're like witches. You know, witches that ride a broomstick and spook people. So it's certainly not the position of, you know, what the satisfaction of the self is hanging out with witches. The fruits of karma and jnana and yoga. So, what's the message here? Pure devotional service of the Lord. Without being tinged by fruitive work, mystic yoga and speculative philosophy is the foremost procedure of self-realization. You got that? That's the third one. Training her up. I'm not picking on you anymore. You don't feel picked on, do you? Good. Training her up. Take nice notes. So pure devotional service, by definition, is without karma, without jnana, without mystic siddhi, fruits of yoga process. And that's what Narada is saying. And guess what? That's the same thing that Rupa Goswami says, because Rupa Goswami is just giving us the essence of what the Vedas say. Especially Srimad Bhagavatam. Jnana Karma Janavratam. In Rupa Goswami's language. Pure devotional service is unmixed. That's the third one. No going back. The second one is, when devotional service is mixed, it loses the fullness of the transcendental potency. It's not full transcendental potency. And to go back to the first one, those things that are devoid of bhakti, while they may give some benefit, some relief of the disturbances of material existence, it doesn't bring satisfaction. It doesn't purify the heart. And when the heart is not purified, some opportunity will come along the way, and there goes that nice person chasing after sex gratification. Vishwamitra chasing after Menaka. So, one should be... Narada wants Vyas to understand the message of pure devotional service is what you should present in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Not the other. Just Paradharma. Not the other dharmas. Dharma prodita kaita vodra paramo niyamatsaranam sitam. And I think tomorrow morning we'll finish chapter 6. Hopefully. So that's the summation of Narada's conclusion of his own experience. So tomorrow morning we're going to hear he concludes Vyas. Narada's instruction to Vyas ends tomorrow morning, and then the summation. Sutta is narrating all of this to the sages of Naimisharanya, because the sages asked a bunch of questions, and he's given some answers to their bunch of questions. And he's concluding that explanation. Narada, Vyas has given some nice service. And if we get to those beginning verses of chapter 7, they're really good verses. Very, 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 very special verses in the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, so any comments, questions? Yenatma supraseedati. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
On the topic of satisfaction of the soul, you were talking about how it's only when one, only in connection with Krishna and devotional service, that the soul feels satisfied. And so that happens four different ways, by hearing, chanting, reading, and also another way is by connection with devotees. And from Dr. Mike, I had a question. Recently we were at the summer camp, and it was just this year especially I felt there were so many devotees who just came forward, and it was such a big collective group effort, really, for 15 days, just continuously a lot of devotees were working together. And one of the things I felt during the camp was it seemed to me like, just because it was the scope of the service was big, it seemed to me like it was hard to maintain. I felt like sometimes I was, in order to keep it going or, you know, to make things happen, there was a tendency to just settle into little pockets and not have connection with other devotees who were doing that service. I didn't feel, or at times it was challenging to keep a connection going, you know, the kind of connection that makes doing something together really enlightening and you know, it makes it meaningful. Sometimes I found that very challenging to keep up with so many devotees, and it's also in other contexts I'm experiencing as the number of devotees are growing. So my question was, how do we, and then there was some dissatisfaction with that, because at the end of the day I would look back and think, okay, you know, there were all these opportunities and maybe some devotees brought something up and I couldn't really talk about it or spend time, or the other way around. And how do we practically do things together in a personal sort of a way and still be able to, especially when it's growing, you know,
the numbers are increasing. A short answer is the quality of the exchanges need to be very genuine. They need not be, as you described, of necessity, you know, by circumstance, they're not going to be the same as, in a smaller group where there's more. So it's less frequent. So let it be quality exchanges. And one way to have quality exchanges is, borrowing from a phrase we used yesterday, just being present. So if you're preoccupied with, there has to be purity. When you're with a person, you're with a person. You know, if there's something else going on, there's a lot of something else that's going on, but when you're with the person, you're with the person. It can just be a very, can even be an eye contact exchange. It's just, you know, connection and presence, and move on. Just an acknowledgement. Doesn't have to be an extended thing. That's when the, you know, in the heat of the moment, when there's a lot going on, you know, you can't get into too much detail on all things, because then it's just, there's a traffic jam. So you can't do that. And a bunch of other people are going to be really disappointed because there's zero attention, because you're just doing one thing when there's meant multiple things. And then, during the moment, present, however succinct. And then, afterwards, you're like, the camp is over, so then you do the in-depth exchange, but with different individuals. I can make I made some suggestions today to Nityananda Pran about the Rath Yatra. You can make a similar one to you. which is ask the different groups of persons, you know, individually, please give me your suggestions. What do you think went well? What do you think could be improved? And it's not just, you know, a feel-good exercise. It's because you want their feedback. And then hold smaller group discussions, you know, with the cooks, and with the ones with this age group, the ones that did that age group, the ones that did the drama, and so on. Because there's a learning curve, there's a relationship building curve, and there's just this, you know, when you're not performing, you're preparing. And then those more in-depth exchanges can take place. So you have a lot of volunteers that they're not so experienced, and they're not, you know, they've never done anything like this before, and they're very much depending upon whatever the flow is. And there's some that are somewhere in between. So it's understandable for a reasonable person that's participating in an event like that. There's a lot of things that details will fall through the cracks. That as an organizer you will know, and they may not even know it because they're not experienced about how these things go. So in advance, during, and afterwards. A lot of details fell through the cracks. But it's, you know, it's okay. But then you bring up those details. If we had done this detail that day, I wasn't tuned into that. That's a good idea. And then you're prepared. So as you do things together, the relationships build. Attention to detail increases, but the quality of the exchange should be by being present and connecting with the person. Just an example of what I'm saying is, I was in Detroit for the Rath Yatra, and I met a whole bunch of people. And in the course of meeting those different people, there wasn't time to have. So one of them wrote back to me and they said, you know, you said something with your eyes. I didn't get the message. But I knew that there was a message. Can you share with me what that message was? And I asked my wife and she wasn't sure either, but she knew that there was a message. So then I could share the message. But it was a setting that just wouldn't have been appropriate. And, it, you know, anyway, it didn't. But they felt the connection. Then the detail got filled in later. You know, there wasn't dissatisfaction. Just the continuation of that relationship, and then the next exchange, and the next exchange.
So what you're saying is, in the moment, it can be a brief quality exchange.
Yes.
And later on, whatever I would like to say to them, or they would like to, it can happen.
Yeah. So I gave an example of what you, but make some structure where that's facilitated. You do it informally anyways. But do it formally, as well as informally. So that everyone feels recognized and encouraged. And as you were not feeling so satisfied because, you know, you have a very high standard for yourself, I can imagine that some of the persons that were there for the first time were also feeling not so satisfied with themselves because they didn't know how to do detailed things. And that's just part of a devotee's sincerity. But, you know, fasten your seatbelt in Amrita Vrindavan, because this is what means growing in, you know, responsibility in Krishna consciousness. Imagine what it's like for myself. I mean, not the after was a riot. Here we are on the street with no police, no guards, nobody, no one, you know, watching the traffic. Nobody knew nothing. Wow. You know, I just wanted to be in the care time, but you know. Anyway, because of experience and whatever, so I had to do what I had to do. And in the course of doing that, I wasn't able to, you know, have nice, cordial, gentle exchanges. I was running here and running there just to make sure, you know, somebody didn't get run over. And the, where's the police? You know, call 911. Or, you know, she was like, yeah, what is it? Well, somebody, I'm sure somebody's in charge. And I said, okay, well, get over, click. Okay. I hope somebody doesn't get run over. And there's a bunch of other things. So then, so afterwards, there's a debriefing. How did it go? What can we do better?
Like, there were so many people who did so many random acts of kindness, like, you know, just brought many things to the camp, and I could write 10 pages about what each one of them got to the camp, and I just, it was just like a rush, thank you, or something like that, and I just didn't feel like not that I have to, but I felt like personally reciprocating, but there was no.
It's circumstantial.
Yeah.
It's understood. It's understood. It's part of the team effort. You know, the before, however much preparation you do, there's always something that doesn't go the way it's planned. And so everybody adjusts because, you know, they have a sense of at least the what the goal is and the direction we have to move in, and they do the needful. And it's part of the excitement of doing service together. It's quite okay. And then afterwards, you thanks, and you know, could you, any input? It's not just thanks for the service. It's one of the rules of volunteerism is ask people's advice. What do you have any recommendations? Not, you know, can you do this next year right away? You're not issuing, you just, thanking afterwards is fine, if not in the moment. Yeah.
Raj, mentioned that performing devotional service would give satisfaction to the self and therefore would satisfy your heart. As a neophyte, our mentors and all the devotees, just main advice is given to a neophyte is chant your rounds, listen as much as possible, read as much as possible. Now, at this point, there's still, you know, like one, two, three that I take off my notebook every day. Haven't reached the point where I could say that, you know, it's just second nature to me. While I know that it's going to take a long time of sadhaka to do that, at some point when I'm taking off those items from my notebook, my mind or my heart perceives it as, all right, I'm done with this, I'm satisfied. Like, half an hour reading, I'm done for today's thing, I take it off my notebook. So how do I avoid, I feel I'm committing an offense by doing that. Now, how do I avoid feeling or making my mind perceive that, all right, you've done this, so you should be satisfied today?
This is a nice question. first a little background on the question. There was a time when you weren't doing those things. So it's progress that you're doing those things. So congratulate yourself. Now I'm doing those things. But now another thing is not only you're doing those things, but you're recognizing that's not what the real satisfaction is doing those things. But it's necessary to do those things. They're vidhis. But the essence is not vidhis. What's the essence? And so it's helping you to get to the essence. So don't be satisfied with just the externals. You get to the essence. What's the essence? The mood of striving for purification, striving for purity, striving for quality in each of those activities. Do them, strive, like, you know, for the rest of your devotional life. To do them with absorption. Just, you know, to help you get a different perspective on what I just said. An example is, I attended a japa retreat in Ojai, California that was intended for it was advertised as Japa Retreat for Leaders. It was good intention that Purushasukta wanted to engage, you know, wanted to bring the, because leaders don't get to do things together so much because we're busy doing stuff for other people. So to come together and just experience going more deeply into the Holy Name together. And one of the things, we went around the room and added up the number of years of devotional service represented in that room. And it was awesome. I mean, you know, 500 years of devotional service in that room. And not just like casual devotional service. Totally immersed in Mother Jamuna and Vishakha and Giriraj Maharaj and Niranjan Maharaj and Dravida and this one and that one. It was just like, phew, absorbed devotees for years. And what were we doing? Same thing your question was about. Not just to, you know, complete our rounds, but to go more deeply into the Holy Name. And that's what we're going to be doing this weekend. And, you know, it's a lifetime of that. So it's good that you're feeling, wait a minute, just, you know, that's good, but that alone is not sufficient. It's good. Keep going. Okay? And in the association of others who are striving in that way, like-minded souls. That's what we're doing. And, you know, your experience in the course of this coming, there's the day by day by day by day, and then when there's opportunities to come together and have this very intense experience, you know, it's like, whew, and then kind of a few steps back, and then it's... gradual purification. I'm Chandra. Anything else?
I had one.
I could tell, even you didn't have your arm up in the air. Go ahead.
I was just thinking that when I was speaking to Anandamana Mataji's question, being present, I was just thinking for myself that being present while chanting and hearing, the intensity or the effort which we put in for hearing and chanting in the mornings, I mean, in a daily schedule, that actually gives us the ability and the strength to be present in situations
yeah.
that you are addressing to Anandamana Mataji.
Yes. Yeah. But it's not just our effort. It's the personalism. It's the being present with Krishna and relying upon Krishna. It says.
So the more we are able to chant,
Krishna sees that effort, and Krishna will help us. And we're dependent upon Krishna's helping us, and then you extend that to the rest of the other things that we do in the course of the day besides our hearing and chanting. The foundation is our hearing and chanting. And yes, qualitatively performing our devotional practices brings us to a qualitative experience of Krishna in the rest of our activity. Okay. Jagatananda?
When we're talking about being absorbed in when we're hearing or chanting, so I was seeing, like, just in the evening now, we set up a conference call for some devotees, and somehow or the other there was some disturbance, and then I got some calls, and then I had to get into that. So in all of that, I don't feel, I miss a lot. And it takes me a while sometimes to sort of just
settle down again.
To settle down after that also. So while that it's taken care of in the moment, but then it takes me a while to sort of come back. And I see that pattern where I just sort of need to learn how to sort of relax and.
It's not just relax. It's concentrate. It's focus. Part of something. It's like the question your wife asked. It's something that persons who are given responsibility and then more responsibility and then more responsibility and then more responsibility and more responsibility and more responsibility have to learn. And that is, be present, be focused. You're doing something, you're giving it undivided attention, the next thing comes and you're giving it undivided attention. The next thing comes, you're giving that undivided attention. The next thing comes, and it's you're very focused. It's required. It's yoga. It's controlling the mind. And back to what Rati said, it starts with how the quality of your sadhana to be able to do that. Because it's a strength that comes from Krishna. It's one sense, it's mental strength, but it's spiritual. Spiritualizing to be able to focus. And really focus.
Yeah, I've not been able to over the last so many days. I'm not able to chant in the morning. So I'm getting up, but then I don't know where my chant goes.
You have to be very attentive. Moment to moment. That's a necessity for persons who have responsibility. And it's Krishna can reduce responsibility, or one can oneself reduce the level of responsibility, but that focus needs to be there, at whatever level of responsibility you're maintaining. And I've shared this dozens of times, and I can say it again. My experience is that Krishna always gives us more to do than we have the capacity to do. And as we depend upon Krishna and really try to effectively and nicely do those things, as we get closer to the point of being able to manage all of what we have to do, Krishna gives us more to do.
This goes back to, like as you were saying, so I want to be mindful of what I'm doing, not just sort of get things done, like as you were saying yesterday. Because if I do mindlessly, then there is duality. But if I do it with full attention, then
yeah, and as we heard today, there's not satisfaction. one sense is, one answer is just do less. Another answer is be more Krishna conscious. And that's a challenge. It's maybe easier to do less. Maybe it's the right thing to do less. But, you know, to meet the challenge is to be Krishna conscious. And part of being Krishna conscious may be just to choose to do less. We've had so many discussions about, you know, between ourselves, you know, one-on-one kinds of discussions about one-on-one discussions about considering doing less. And, you know, it's good to, as you have done, and others, we've had others' discussions with others about doing less. But time management, you know, for a busy devotee is, you just department, departmentalize your time. And you do something for some period of time and then you stop. Then you go on to the next thing. You finish where you finish.
Feeling like I'm not able to keep up with communication or even just services. Like I'm even behind on the services that you've given me within the last week. It's Abhinsara, it's Rath Yatra. And it's just ongoing, like I'm so behind on communication and
very familiar with what you just described from my own service. The same or similar answer. You know, at a certain point you just, you know, you don't accept something further, and in relationships with people, you know, you have to they have to understand, you know, you let them understand that there are periods when you have more time and there's periods where you have less time. When you have less time, the communication may diminish. But it's not, that doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean a negative something. It just means I got a wave of things. And, you know, festival season is that kind of a time. And, you know, when you came to Gita camp, you should have known. This means that it's just some things are not going to happen in a timely manner if I'm going to do that. And if I can't live with that, then I can't go to the camp. So just then you resolve in your mind and don't torture yourself that I'm behind on some things. and some of the similar points that have been made before, that, that the exchange is just be quality, however, make the connection personal, and when there is time, then you can go more extensively. And when there isn't time, then those that you have real meaningful relationships with, they'll understand. Okay. See the Prabhupada.
So then, should one person ask me?